Welcome to Alternative Realities, a podcast about the people, strategies, and stories driving the world of alternative investments. I'm Aaron Mulvihill, and my guest today is Darren Olson. Darren is the chair of the Committee for America's Infrastructure on the American Society of Civil Engineers. In this position, Darren leads the committee that publishes the hugely influential report card for America's infrastructure. Across the world, the need for infrastructure investments is vast, as economies need to build, maintain, and upgrade new and existing infrastructure. And now, artificial intelligence and data centers are putting new demands on power and water. This has put increased urgency on the need to invest in the networks to enable continued growth. To help identify where additional investment is required, the American Society of Civil Engineers every 4 years puts out a report card for America's infrastructure. Given the growing interest in infrastructure, we thought it would be great to speak with the chair of the committee responsible for the report. On today's episode, we will discuss how U.S. infrastructure fared in the 2025 report card, which sectors require additional investment, and how private capital can help fill in the funding gaps. Let's get right into it. Thank you for joining me on the podcast, Aaron.
Aaron, thanks so much for having me.
One of the areas that we cover in our guide to alternatives is infrastructure. And we rely on the research that you create to gauge the need for infrastructure. Can you give us some background first, before we get into the conversation, on the American Society of Civil Engineers?
Absolutely. So the American Society of Civil Engineers is approximately 160,000 civil engineers throughout the nation and throughout the world. We're the oldest civil engineering society. We were founded in 1852, and our members consist of students in college, professionals in the workplace, government employees, people in the private sector, professors at universities. So really a huge cross-section of civil engineers, like I said, throughout the nation and throughout the world.
Yeah, really esteemed institution, and 1852, I think you've got J.P. Morgan beat by 4 or 5 years there, just about. So in your most recent report card, we read it through and through, but the first thing you see on the front cover is the grade, right? You gave American infrastructure a C grade. Yeah. What does that mean, and how has that grade evolved over time?
It's a great question. We as civil engineers, are really the managers, the stewards of the built environment and of the natural world, we feel. And so we really feel it's our duty to once every 4 years let the American people, let our elected officials know, how are we doing on infrastructure, right? Because infrastructure is not something that the average person thinks about every day. But we want to bring it to people's attention of what is the state of our infrastructure before something goes wrong? And you are correct. This year, in this 4-year period, we saw our second increase. And so now we're at a C. If you go back in time a little bit, we've been doing this since 1988. We were in the D range for many, many report cards.
So we're getting better.
Getting better. Yes, we're getting better. We were a C minus in 2021. And then this year, we are a C. Now, still, a C is not a grade you would want to bring home to your parents, right? And my kids brought home a C in their report card. You kind of look at them and like, what's really going on?
That wouldn't be happy.
No. And I wouldn't be happy if my kids brought that home. But what does it really mean? Our infrastructure is, if you look at the definition, it's in mediocre condition, right? So there are some systems that are doing well. There are others that are vulnerable to some risk. So it's kind of the middle of the road. But when you look at the United States and where we should be with infrastructure, where we need to be with our infrastructure to compete globally, C is not it. We need to be at a higher grade, and we're seeing some progress. There's the improvement due to the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that we saw in 2021, which was a big boost, a large investment of $1.2 trillion. About $550 billion of that was new money.
Yeah. I remember when that came out because I spent a lot of my career in the infrastructure industry, and that was a huge deal.
Yeah, generational is what we called it, right? It was a generational investment in our infrastructure. But we'd been underinvesting in our infrastructure for generations as well. Right. And so that's how we ended up at a D for so long with our infrastructure. And I tell people, it took us a long time to get where we're at with our infrastructure, right? Which it was in that D range. Yeah. It's going to take us a while to get out of that as well. And I think what we saw in 2021 with IIJA and IRA was another big investment in our infrastructure. We're seeing the needle start to move in the right direction, but there's still a long way to go, and we need to sustain that investment for a long period of time.
So one of the things you do in the report is you look at different sectors. Yeah. And one I'd love to focus on for its importance for investors is the power and electricity sector. Mm-hmm. How do you rate power and electricity? What's the state of that sector right now?
It's interesting, and you're correct. We look at 18 different categories of infrastructure, and the energy was one of the lower grades. And there's a lot of need in that sector right now, and it is changing dramatically. In fact, as we went from our 2021 report card to our 2025, the need in energy infrastructure basically tripled, is okay. What we saw. And some of that has been met. I think if you look at the 10-year need for infrastructure, it's roughly the total needs about 1.9 trillion. I think some of that, a good portion of that, is met, but we still have, pretty close to $600 billion in needs in the energy sector over the next 10 years.
And where's that coming from? Because, for a long time, I look at the statistics within the United States, energy consumption was declining.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've had some shifts, right? We have data centers now, we've got electric vehicles. Where do you see this demand coming from? What's changed?
Yeah, it is such a unique category of our infrastructure for a while. And what we've seen is the generation of electricity and how that has changed dramatically. We've had some of our warmest years on record. When you look at climate loss, losses due to climate changing. It's over the span of, I think, like 8 years, it was $1 trillion in losses. So people are realizing we need to do something as to how we generate electricity and power. And so we saw we're seeing a transition from, fixed generation, the typical coal-fired power plants or gas plants, and then distributing and transmitting energy out from there. We've seen a shift to now distributed energy generation, where you have solar and wind and some of the other renewables. We're getting into battery storage. Mm-hmm. And the cost of a lot of that has started to come down quite a bit, which makes them much more attractive, and they're great for the climate. And so we saw that was part of it, like on the supply side we saw. But then recently we're seeing this huge shift on the demand side, right? There are estimates, that our demand for electricity is going to be going up, percentages every year, to the point where we're probably going to double our electrical demand here pretty quickly, certainly within our lifetime.
Yeah, and we started with kind of zero demand increase if you go back, say, 10 years, because we were introducing LED lights and these massive TV screens got thinner and they require less. But then You've got a few more dynamics now at play.
Yeah, the data centers are the big one now. The electric vehicle charging stations certainly as well. But we're seeing, the data centers they literally require their own substation that could power a municipality. And that substation is not powering the municipality. It is powering just this data center. Yeah. And so we're seeing a big shift on and the demand side. And so what does that mean? That means there's a big need for investment in our infrastructure. We like to say that it took us, over 100 years to wire the United States. We're going to have to rewire it here pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's looking like it. So zooming out, what are some of the other areas that you think have large funding gaps right now?
So energy was a big one. The other, probably the largest one, if you look at the water sector overall, look at drinking water, look at wastewater, look at stormwater. If you take all those and add them together, the 10-year funding gap for those is roughly $1 trillion. And these are things that we use every single day, right? Yeah. We may not think about water that much, but when you turn on the faucet in the morning and you brush your teeth, it's something that we take. I think we, in the United States, we take that for granted.
You don't think about it until it stops flowing.
Exactly. Exactly. Or until, you know, I know here in New York, you've had your urban flooding issues. I'm from
Hurricane
Chicago.
Sandy.
Yeah. And so there's a huge desire to not only we need to build new water infrastructure to expand out to our expanding population, but one of the biggest things with our water infrastructure is to make it more resilient, right? We when we invest in that water infrastructure, you want to take the long-term approach of let's look at the full life cycle cost of this infrastructure and build it to be able to tolerate the storms that we see now, but the storms that we're going to be seeing in 50 years from now, which I think we're all starting to get the picture that they're going to be a lot different.
Yeah. And when we think about infrastructure, it's a public good, right? We all use it.
Yeah.
But it's not just paid by taxpayer money, and increasingly private investment is a big part of that. Like, where do you think private investment fits into the infrastructure equation?
It's a critical role. It really is. I think what we're seeing when you have in the report card estimated the 10-year gap of all of our infrastructure categories, if you added all of them together, was $3.7 trillion is the gap, right? So that's, we've got certain needs, we've got certain funding allocated, and then we've got this $3.7 trillion gap. It's hard to say that amount of money, right?
Yeah.
it's a lot of money.
So that's what you've got. Government is allocating this much. That's taxpayer dollars and so on. And then this gap, that's got to come from somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. And that is, I think the private sector has a huge role to play in making up that gap. You know, we've got the federal has a role, the states have a role, local governments have a role. But like you said, the private sector really has a critical role here to step in and play with infrastructure.
Yeah. And we're certainly seeing it from a lot of sources, right? You've got municipal bonds have been kind of the traditional way of funding this. Increasingly, you have private infrastructure funds that are playing a big role. And one area where they've been particularly active has been energy. Why do you think energy is more attractive to investors?
You know, I think a lot of what we talked about with, you know, it's a changing sector of our infrastructure. And so I think that creates opportunities. There is certainly the need is growing probably faster than any of our other infrastructure categories. But also then I think there's this concept of like almost like a payment structure set up where people are accustomed to paying for energy, right? And so I think that you see the energy bill or your utility bill coming in every month, and it's kind of like you're used to paying for that. I think other categories of our infrastructure, like water and roads, there's a bit of a controversy of having to pay for that, right? Like, oh, I don't want to be tolled on the roads, or my water bills are too high, or we shouldn't have to pay for water. It's right out there. But energy is one where I think that structure has been set up where people are accustomed to paying for the energy that they use.
Yeah. And I wonder, I'm European myself, come from Ireland, and when I look at Europe versus the US, Europe actually has a lot more private infrastructure in terms of categories, and I wonder, does that change? Like, we've got more toll roads, more privately owned airports, water systems can be private, and maybe that's something that changes over time in the US as this funding gap grows and some of these opportunities get created.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that. I think Europe is ahead of us in some of the ways that they think of their infrastructure and like the willingness to pay for it. And I think that lends itself well to maybe bringing over some of those ideas with, funding like our water infrastructure. Our, another big one is our roads. They have nearly a $600 billion gap in our roads as far as funding is concerned over the next 10 years. And I think that's another one that lends itself well to private investment.
Yeah. And to wrap up our conversation, can you touch on the need for infrastructure spending over the next 5 years or so? And how does that compare to the past, and how should that impact capital spending needs?
Yeah, that's a great question. The word I would use for over the next couple years would maybe is the word uncertainty, right? I mean, I think you know, in 2021, with the passing of IIJA, that was a 5 or 6 year, very large, like we talked about, generational infrastructure investment by our federal government. And there was some certainty there, right? And infrastructure likes certainty because it takes a while. These larger capital projects take a while to plan, to design, to permit, and to build. These are longer term sort of investments, right? Yep. And I think as we see this, this $3.7 trillion gap, and a lot of this, the infrastructure funding is going to be expiring this September, and there's going to be a decision at the federal level. Do we continue with this path of investment that we're on? You know, we've somewhat moved the needle in the right direction. Are we going to continue to invest that way? Or are we going to maybe leave things status quo, or are we going to maybe pull back a little bit? And so that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out this year. Really, the hope is that because it takes a community of funding to fill this gap, right? We need both investment on the federal, state, local, and on the private side. The hope is that the federal side continues to move forward in the right direction, but it is going to take investment on the private side to fill that gap, just because it's large.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Darren, thank you very much for coming and joining the Alternative Realities Podcast.
Aaron, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Darren Olson, chair of the American Society of Civil Engineers Committee for the 2025 Report Card for America's Infrastructure. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for listening to the Alternative Realities Podcast. You can download our first quarter 2026 Guide to Alternatives on the JP Morgan Asset Management website at jpmorgan.com/GTA. And if you've not already done so, please subscribe to Alternative Realities on your favorite podcasting platform.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed by JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Company. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.